Okay, hello all. My name is Abdemisola. I am one of two of Jakpa Diaries. We are a podcast that documents the experiences of African immigrants in the diaspora.
Yes, and I'm Malik. I'm the second half of Jakpa Diaries that likes to document the experience of immigrants in the diaspora. And fun fact, Abdemisola and I are siblings.
Yes, we'll let you guys guess who is older. The ladies failed tragically, but I'll let you guys guess. Yeah.
Wait, do your listeners not know who's older?
No, our listeners definitely know. I think your listeners wouldn't.
Yeah. I usually like to flex my age on Abimsola, so they know. They know.
Yeah, they are way.
I'm screaming. Yeah. Wait, so does she call you brother?
God, she should. She should.
I mean,
it's three years.
Abimsola, if you ask your mother and father, that's the proper protocol.
Exactly, it's almost now, a full university now, degree. It's a college diploma.
It's not a college. See, give me 4 or 5 years and hey, I can start talking. Yeah.
You've come to America and you've accepted these Western ways and you've forgotten your culture back home.
I'm crazy.
My mom says that all the time.
That is too funny.
Yeah.
Okay, Matilda, did you want to introduce yourself first?
Sure. My name is Matilda, and I am one of three of the Africa Calypso podcast, and we are a bi-weekly podcast at this point. And we just talk about everything surrounding being Nigerian, and we are also in the diaspora, so we have an overlap here, I think. But yeah.
Yeah. And you guys are in Canada, correct? Yeah. Yes. You guys are our first Canadians.
Yeah,
that's interesting because there are a lot of Nigerians in Canada now. So, anyways, it's an honor.
It's okay. We'll get to that. Let's finish our introductions.
Yeah.
Oh, true. Okay. Hi everyone. My name is Imama Egyonu. I don't know where I wrote my full government name. I don't know. Anyways, my name is Imama, but
as well as Minunido.
Yeah. So my middle name is Tiffany. So some people do call me Tiffany because they can't pronounce
it.
My preferred first name is Imama.
Love to see it.
But I mean, Tiffany is on my passport, contrary to popular opinion, because some people think that I made it up. No, my parents gave me, it's on my birth certificate, it's on my passport.
Yeah.
It's been my name. But anyways, yeah. I'm also one of three of the Africa Calypso podcast hosts. A podcast that, like Matilda said, just documents like the experience of Nigerians, like young Nigerians, and just everything related to Nigerian society, culture, bands, all those things, and just Nigerians in the diaspora. And yeah, I don't know what else to say about us. I guess Matilda and I have known each other for a while. We went to secondary school together, went to university-ish together. Love that. First job ish together as well.
Yeah, oh my gosh, she's stalking me.
But it's literally the other way around.
Actually, it's the opposite way, okay, but whatever.
Okay.
It's the other way around.
Okay.
Are you guys living together?
No,
are you sure?
Actually, Hadiza and Matilda, but I'll let Hadiza get into that because Hadiza and Matilda have actually lived together. Mm-hmm. So technically, Matilda is a stalker here because she has stalked Hadiza and I throughout our lives.
Basically. Or I'm the glue that holds this podcast together.
I can't lie, I like Matilda's point of view.
Okay, I don't like it, but sure.
Okay, let's go, Dizzy D.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dizzy D, but you can also call me Hadiza. So I'm the third host of the podcast, Africa Calypso podcast, and Matilda and Imama have already spoken about what the podcast is about. We do like gist. We have a whole half of our podcast dedicated to gist.
Yeah.
So that's one thing to highlight. And how did I know Matilda? We met actually in first year university, and then we lived together for like most of our university careers, literally. And then I met Imama through Matilda.
So Matilda might indeed be this glue.
What did I say? I mean, no, it is true.
Okay, so we're essentially here today to like get you guys' African immigrant story experience. How'd you guys end up in Canada? I would love to know all about that. And in the process, I think we're going to get to know a lot about each other today. But Matilda, let's start with you. What is your JAPA story, please? How did you end up in Canada?
Thank you.
Matilda, I've been waiting for this, to tell this
story. Can you imagine?
I love it.
So thank you so much.
I realized when we were going to come on the podcast that even though we talk about it in bits and pieces on our podcast, we really haven't really gone into our journey as immigrants. Mm-hmm. But I think it really comes from the point of view of the time that we were migrating here. It wasn't really seen as JAPA. Like, it wasn't...
We jackpot before it was cool.
Yeah, it was before it was cool, before it was necessary.
Yeah, necessary.
Yeah, I would say before it was necessary. And I think our set was, like, one of the last couple of sets, I would say, that migrated with the option of going back to Nigeria. I came here not necessarily thinking I was going to stay here, to be very honest, because I had a cousin that had gone to school in London and she went back home. Like, she lives in Nigeria still. Like, people around me would go back to Nigeria. So when I came here, I actually did come for school.
What year was that, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, let's know the age.
It was 2013 and I was 16.
Okay, that's fair.
So, okay, the year is 2013. And what song was reading?
Please,
Lord.
Please.
By Roy. I'm setting the scene. So I came the route that a lot of Nigerians were coming back then, which was to what we call college, which is essentially just doing grade 12 all over again. And a lot of schools, international schools, would offer that as a transition into university because the systems are kind of different. And it gave us more, or at least at that point in time, we believe that it gave us more opportunities in terms of like choices of university. So my dad knew a couple of people that their kids had gone to this school, Columbia International College in Hamilton. And my dad honestly did the whole thing. First of all, I thought I was going to Covenant because my brother had gone to Babcock. I did JAMB, I did the whole application thing. So that's why when I say I came to university in Canada, not really necessarily thinking initially that I was, because my dad was moving like it could really be either way. Mm-hmm. But then I ended up in CIC. Not really my application, like it wasn't me that applied, it wasn't me that did anything, but it was absolutely my dad's thing. And then I did university and
How did you take the first initial conversation where he's like, we might be going to Canada instead?
I'd say it wasn't really a conversation. It wasn't much of a conversation. I was 16.
Not the I order you.
And it was just like,
yeah.
It wasn't I order you, like in that, I mean, I thought I was going to Covenant and my dad said, I'm going to Canada. Am I arguing with you? Let's be going.
Like, Yeah.
I want to go to Covenant. No. Exactly. You're ruining my life.
He was the one paying the tuition. And also I was scared of going to Covenant because I knew they had really strict rules. And I saw Canada as like my place to exert even more independence and stuff. So
yeah,
it was more that, more so than like greener pastures. I was 16, so I wasn't really thinking much, I would say, ahead. I was thinking more like freedom and etc. So,
okay, Tiffany, you want to tell us about your JAPA story?
Excuse me, now you calling me Tiffany. But
yeah, it's your government name.
I mean, honestly, it works.
If this podcast gets like 2,000 likes, Tiffany is going to post a picture of her passport.
Let's dial back a little bit. No, but it seems like a burden. But actually, I think my story is kind of similar to Matilda's in that it's the year 2012. Okay, I'm not going to do that. But yeah, so I came here in 2012. I actually didn't do year 12 in Lagos. So I have an older brother and he actually was already in Canada. And I guess like we had kind of realized that, kind of like what Matilda said, where the whole pre-university thing, because I also did that, was basically year 12. So my parents were like, okay, instead of me doing year 12 in Lagos, in Nigeria, I would just come and do my year 12 over here. So I didn't do jam, but I didn't do AEC. I didn't do any of those fun things. Literally, yeah, from year to year 11. Fun, yeah. I actually left from year 11 to Canada in 2012, and I did pre-university. And it was interesting because, like, obviously I was excited to come because my brother was here. And, like, I was like, oh, it's Canada. It's going to be cool. But also, I think, like, I was also sad because, in a way, it's like you want to experience, like, extensions in year 12. You want to experience, like, you know, being, like, a proper prefect and all those things. And, like, you know, they had made me a prefect as well before I left.
Head girl, actually.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I don't even know, already knew she was leaving, but she still applied to be head girl. And she won.
And they still gave her. Wow.
Honestly, it was. I want to experience it. So I really, really like experiences.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I just
that,
wanted to experience it. So I got to be that for like 2 weeks in what was it? What's that thing that we go for? That
C-school.
Thing that C-school.
Oh, C-school.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah, so I got to do C-school.
Wait, let's establish, where did you guys go to school? Because why did we all do C-school?
We went to Seth.
I don't know. Oh,
Seth.
I don't think. Was that,
you know,
was that far from us, Abim? Oh, no, I think it is.
What school did you guys go to?
Went to Corona, bro. That's actually far from us. I think I just placed Seth mentally now. Yeah, I think that's actually far from us.
Seth is on the mainland.
Yeah,
it's in
exactly.
Magadu.
Yeah, yeah.
So close to Ikeja. Yeah. But yeah, so I was kind of sad that I was leaving because I didn't get to experience all those like SS3, like big babe stuff.
Lifestyles, yeah.
Exactly. But like, I was too excited because I came and my brother was here and like, you know, he spoiled me a little bit and I got to experience Canada. And in a way, be like ahead of my sets by like, you know, 1 year. So that was also interesting. And yeah, so I came in 2012. And the reason why I actually remember that Azonto was winning that year was because they used to do that thing. It was like, Tiffany, I don't know if you guys know Azonto. So they used to do it a lot. So every time I just walk out, like, somebody was like, Tiffany, and I'm just like, okay, guys.
No, you shouldn't have to use it. Yeah, so you're finished. I'm so sorry for you today.
I did that pre-university, and then after that I went to uni, and yeah, so that was my JAPA experience. Actually, one thing similar to Matilda, I think I also wasn't necessarily thinking of like staying like that. I think like I came and I was like, okay, I'll go to school and we'll see how it goes. Like, it wasn't a thing where it was like I must stay, because then like Naira was still relatively strong. I think it was like 150 or something like that. Like, it's like I was, in a way, we were balling and like, you know, doing well. So it was like I didn't need to stay if I didn't want to stay. I was thinking of, oh, maybe I'll go to England to do my master's, maybe I'll go back to Nigeria. So it wasn't really a thing where I felt like I was going to come and stay here forever. It was just like, I'm going to come to school and we'll see how it goes from there.
We had options.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's my story.
Okay.
Dizzy D, the floor is yours.
Honestly, this story is very similar. So I was in Lagos. I was finishing grade 11 and then I wanted to actually go do A-level. So my dad, sometime I think maybe early grade 11 or end of grade 10, he was like, you're going to be applying out of Nigeria. So start kind of looking for schools, and they sent suggestions as well. So my focus was kind of on going to the UK, but then at that time the schools I had applied to or that I really wanted to go to, they said I was too young to start A-levels, so they kind of postponed my start date to like a year I would have to do a gap year essentially before doing A-levels, and I didn't want to do a gap year like in my father's house. Like, I was too excited to be out. So
that's a word.
Yeah,
that's a word.
So
yeah.
So, you know, and then I think someone suggested Canada, and then we just kind of looked into, you know, schooling here. So, like, similar to both of them, it was really for school purposes. I wasn't thinking of the potential of staying in Canada. In fact, I was just looking at it. It just looked like an extended holiday for me. Sure, I was going to school. But, like, a reason to, like, escape the house and like experience like a new culture and stuff like that. I would go on YouTube to search like what my school looked like, I ended up going to Vancouver when I came. So I had the option of, they were like, oh, CIC, or like, which is where Matilda them went to, or Bodwell. And at that time I was like, oh, you know, this is unknown territory. Let me let me do adventure and go somewhere where nobody else is there. Yeah. So yeah, so I found myself in Vancouver. So at that time, it wasn't about staying here. Also, crazy enough, you were talking about the exchange rates, Imama, like crazy, because at that time I thought it was a loss. Like I would be like calculating, like damn, like 150 naira is $1 Canadian, like that's a lot. It's like I would be counting pennies.
Yeah. How you feeling now, girl?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can only hope and pray that things return.
Yeah, I saw that I went up to 800 this week. I almost choked. Yeah, I was crazy. Like, guys, let's take a second.
That is 850.
Let's take a second.
That's insane. Like, what?
Crazy.
I can't imagine what international students are doing right now.
I can't imagine what people are just sending their kids here. Because the school fees, they reduced.
The school fees increased. Because, like, it keeps increasing.
Yeah.
No, I think insane. The landscape is getting much more different even in Canada, because when Naira was doing very well, that's when the pre-university thing was very popular. But I think it's getting less and less popular now because people are like, why spend money so you can do grade 12 again?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Grade 12 in Nigeria. Yeah. So a lot of people are directly applying to university and it's just fine. But I find that some people are struggling more because of it, because at least we got 1 year to still assimilate into the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, even though we were surrounded by like a lot of international students.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that assimilation, I don't even know how.
Yeah, I think we can get a bit more into it, because that unique experience, you thought you were assimilating because you were in Canada, but really you were surrounded by a lot of other international students. And also, in CIC, at least, they did everything for us, literally. It was a boarding school. They organized our food. They took us to school. They took us on trips. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just boarding school abroad.
Yeah.
It was just boarding school abroad. Yeah. So, like, we never really got to immerse ourselves. So, really, university was the first time we were really interacting with Canadians. But I would still say that it helped a lot education wise, because, you know, things like citation and stuff is not a thing that we did in law.
That citation P right there. That was there. Education was nonsense. They didn't because you'd be writing google.com on your presentation.
Wikipedia.
Wow. Yeah, you get here.
You guys, if you guys saw me, my life flashed before my eyes. The first time my professor said he's going to film me for plagiarizing, I said, "Excuse me, sir. First of all, what is plagiarizing?"
Can you define the term?
Yeah.
First and foremost,
please, before you punish me, explain.
Can I know my crime?
That is too funny.
But you can imagine the stress of learning that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to ask how you guys Japan'd.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Abim, you want to go first?
I'm screaming. Sorry, that breath is actually...
Let me go first. Let me go first since my experience happened first.
Yeah.
As the older sibling.
As my older Shege.
Yeah.
As my brother Malik.
When I say I used sincerity to flex, so you guys thought I was joking. Anyway, so coming to America was also 2013. I did a little bit of a gap year, actually, in California with family, because I didn't start school until the fall, but I left Nigeria in January of 2013. So from January up until August, I was just literally chilling, hanging out with my family who was in the US. Then I went to school. The plan was always to go to school. That was the path. I didn't really have any plans. I didn't even formulate the plan of, oh, am I just coming to school and going back? Am I coming and staying? I wasn't even thinking that far. I was just so excited about so excited about coming to the US and starting school and this new journey and adventure. Only, you know, I didn't know where to take me. I was just more so caught up in that hype rather than just thinking, is this a, it didn't flag as a JAPA experience. Like, this was just what everyone did. Like the school we went to, everyone just went to either the UK or America for school. So it was just all part of the flow. It didn't really feel like a JAPA at the time, but yeah, for the most part, it was just come get this degree, then reevaluate at the end.
Yeah.
Hey, none of us left under duress, I guess.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think we were the last people that were somewhat, you know, lucky that it was even going home was even an option. Yeah.
Right.
Option. Yeah.
Because, okay, so I also wasn't really thinking about Jackpying in that way to like stay, but I had the extra layer of, by the time I moved to the US, my parents had also made the move to the US. Mm. So they were actually here a year before me. They left me in boarding school for one year. We'll not get into the abandonment issues. Yeah, I'm going to keep repeating that because Ebola showed you pepper that year. Oh, shit. Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean Ebola showed you pepper?
It was the year that Ebola touched down Lagos, yeah. And I was also
tell me why I thought you got Ebola.
Girl, and I'm standing, whoa. No.
I said, is this a testimony?
No. But so they were already here. And so when they kind of mentioned that they wanted to move, like, it just made sense. Abim is the last person here. I'm definitely going. But again, at the time, we weren't necessarily being chased out. I was still thinking, like, I will still go home, do NYSC after school, and then, you know, see what I'm doing after that. But I don't know whether it was 2020. After NSAS, I said, Abim, but yeah, you'll be looking straight at the America in front of you.
Wait, what year did you...
I left Nigeria in 2015. So I graduated in 2015. I also did a gap year. And then I started college in 2016. Yeah.
At the height of the downfall.
I'm dead.
Yeah.
I think that was the beginning. That was the beginning. 2016.
At the very beginning, yeah. Because I just remember one day waking up and exchange rate had...
Yeah.
And then it just kept scattering anyhow. And I was just like, oh, thank God they're not paying international school fees, actually. Yeah. Thank God.
Because at that time they had food.
Oh, that's true.
And I feel like our parents being here was also a pretty big factor in maybe not going back home. Because I evaluated it for a little bit. Actually, to be fair, it was the pandemic year. I bought a ticket. I was going to go back home for a year. I was going to do NYSC, all of that. But coming to that conclusion, I had to really, really think about it because for the most part, when I was thinking about going back home, I was going to go back to my house. Like, my mom and dad were there. Like, I knew a home I was going to. I knew that it wouldn't be too tough. I won't have to struggle that much under, you know, my parents' umbrella. But me going back in 2020, because they were here, it was going to be a little harder than I thought because I was going to be by myself, you know?
Yeah.
And you'll still be paying rent?
Yeah, we'd be staying in a cousin's house
or something like that. Yeah, you can't move mad the same way if it's your own father's house, you know. So it was pretty hard decision to come to, but I wanted it for myself, just, you know, change of scenery. And I'm actually fortunate to have a blue passport, so I can always come back whenever I want. So that was
No, but he was looking for this reaction, dude.
So moving on. It didn't feel as
it's people that have passport that are always saying moving on. So it's not a big deal to you again.
Yeah. So it didn't really feel as scary. It didn't feel as scary at the time. Yeah. Then when COVID happened and, you know, the airline canceled my flight back home, I was like, Malik, the universe is telling you to behave yourself. But that face your front.
Yeah. I'm curious, though, because at the time I moved, I was 17 going on 18. I think Malik about the same. You guys started kind of early, though, like 16.
Yeah, I came at 15.
15 as well.
Did you guys feel mature enough to make that move at that time?
No, I mean, I stay a child. Well, you know, I think then I probably thought I was mature. Yeah. Also because, like, all my life I was in boarding school, even though my boarding school experience was interesting in that I used to go home like every weekend and then every two weekends. Wow. So it's like I wasn't like in boarding
what
school.
What they call that? Weekly boarding.
Weekly boarder.
Yeah, I was a weekly boarder. Yeah. So that was nice. But I think even just being in boarding school, like, in a way prepared me. And when I came, like, I obviously came with my mom stayed with me for a bit before she left. Okay. So that was also nice. But I remember, like, even when she left, I'm a very emotional person. I used to cry.
You used to cry?
Yes. I literally, so the walk from, so first of all, it was very cold because I came when it was like close to winter. I literally came September 28th. Why give you guys that date?
Why you remember that date?
I don't know that date.
Yeah, how do you remember that date?
I don't know. It's just in my head. But that's when I came, Sha. And like winter literally was like about to start. So when like my mom had left, like winter was like kind of already in.
Yeah.
Well, Sha starting, Sha. And the walk from my house to the bus stop, so I used to take the bus to school. Like, I guess my experience was slightly different from Matilda's in that us, we actually like navigated the city ourselves. So we used to enter like the public bus. And the walk from my house to the bus stop was like maybe like 10, 15 minutes. So I would literally be walking in the snow and crying.
You got hit hard. I'm so sorry.
No, honestly, I mean, it's funny now, but then I was just like, I used to cry, but I used to talk to my mom like every day. So it wasn't like the worst thing, to be honest. But yeah, I don't think I felt like maturing. I think I felt like I could do it. But like looking back, I definitely don't think I was mature enough to like handle that by myself. But
yeah,
I definitely felt in that moment like, okay, I'll cry sometimes, but ultimately everybody's doing it. I can do it. I had my friends and I still have friends from then now. Like I had friends who became family. So it's like we're all kind of doing it together and helping ourselves through it, that it didn't feel like the worst thing in the world.
I'm so sorry. Did you ever just feel like, man, I could have been head girl right now instead of walking in snow?
Actually, no, I don't think I ever felt that way. Because like I was like, I mean, ultimately, I'll still come here anyways. I walk in the snow. So let me just walk in the snow and get it over with.
Okay.
Adisa, what about you? Do you feel mature enough?
Oh, yeah, I was definitely young. I mean, crazy enough then, I always thought I was old for some reason. I think I've always felt like I was old. I'm like the first born, so probably that was it. So I mean, wow. I basically
a real first daughter.
Yeah, unfortunate. But I guess I feel like I cried. My dad is the one who dropped me off, and like I cried when he was dropping me off, but I think pretty much when he left, I was like, okay, yeah. Time to have fun, I guess. Like,
not time to have fun.
She was so ready to leave the house.
That was ready. Like, you guys don't understand. So I feel like looking back, I definitely was young. Like, I can't imagine. Like, I look at 15-year-olds now, and I'm like, I can't imagine having a 15-year-old child going across the seas to drop them off in a school.
The globe, essentially.
And you're just like, I remember before leaving Nigeria, my dad being like, Hadiza, you know you're going to be alone. Don't disgrace. Don't disgrace us. Do the right thing. Let God lead you.
My mom definitely told me that as well.
Yeah,
my mom definitely told me that too.
Like, not Nigerian parents thinking that they have to tell you leaving you at 15 years.
At 15, don't disgrace us.
They said bye, but don't disgrace us.
Going through puberty, but sure.
So yeah, that was my experience starting out. I mean, my school was very much like, it was in North Vancouver, so very much tucked away from everything. So like, if you wanted to go downtown, you have to kind of journey out into downtown. So I think most of the time students kind of stayed within a certain area, which was kind of more of a quiet area and stuff like that. So it didn't feel like a steep hill to kind of get over. And also, like, most of our school were like international students as well, so everyone was pretty much in the same boat. So
okay, so you can suffer together.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was like.
But I didn't feel like I suffered at all.
Love that. Speak more.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't think, at least where I was, because we all went to different schools, so of course we had different experiences, but I think the last time that I cried that my parents were like leaving me at school was like year 7. Because
Matilda, your experience is different, right? Like, I mean, speak about your secondary school experience, that may make more sense in context.
Yeah, I guess in context, like, my parents lived in Port Harcourt and I went to school in Lagos, right? So a lot of times I would probably only see my parents like
longer holidays. My aunt also lived in the same estate that the school was in. So like their thought process was like, your relative is close by. So like for midterms and like shorter breaks, they can take care of you and stuff. And then we'll see you over the long break. When you said abandonment issues, I was like, yes, girl, yes.
You're trauma bonded.
But I'm literally the poster child. But so like I think when I was moving to Canada initially, I was like, that's crazy. Like I'm going to be this far away from my family. Then I was like, it's low-key the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing. I was already away. So then I somehow like didn't feel like it was that big of a deal. Like my brain rationalized it. Like there was no difference me being 1,000 miles away and me being like however far Port Harcourt is from Lagos.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it didn't feel like a big deal. So my parents did come and drop me off and everything. In university, they didn't drop me off. They literally just sent me from Lagos to Ottawa and they said, oh, yeah. You figure out brush and everything.
Yeah, you already know Canada Road now. They say you got it.
But I did not.
He did not.
Did your parents drop you off for university?
Yeah, like my dad did. So my dad came with me.
Oh yeah, no, my parents didn't drop me off for university. My brother did, but then like my mom came to visit like a few weeks after.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, like, I'm telling you, nobody came with me. Like no one came to see me after. Aww. Like.
I hate to break it to you. My whole family moved me in. Malik even flew in from where were you, Philly? It was a full Ada goes to school movement.
Yeah.
I love that though. That is so nice.
Yeah. But after that, you think my mother saw that school again? Oh no.
Oh, no. But, you know, it's so funny. I feel like a lot of people actually say that where like their parents come once and that's the end.
That's it.
At the beginning and at the end.
Let me just see beginning what's happening.
Yeah, at graduation.
When I'm ready to pick you up. Yeah.
Me too. I think I had a nice moving in as well. I can't cap. I felt bad though, like because it was just your mom and dad have been sold that moved me in, and as soon as they just finished helping me put the last box down, I started chasing them. I'm like, I guess, come on, we go.
Like university starts now.
Yeah.
You're wasting my time. Yeah. So like, I felt like just to like talk about like feeling unprepared and all that kind of stuff. I didn't even think I spent a couple minutes to think about it. I was just so full of zeal. I was excited about the moment. I was just ready to go. It's not until like maybe America, I said America, and I was like, okay, one or two is going on here. But like initially, I was on straight vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak more on that? What do you mean America started America in? Because America has been America in to me.
I'm from
the jump, yeah.
Yeah. Since I was born.
I mean, like,
well, can you explain what you mean? Yeah.
Like, I mean, going to school is a little harder. The school system is a little more, like, I think university was more challenging than I anticipated it to be, you know, because I don't know, for some reason, I had this notion that going to school in America, those guys don't know anything.
Why
do Nigerians think that? It's actually
Nigerian things think that things that are easy like are easy. Like they think that
we
like,
have a
that,
superiority
like,
complex.
Yes,
10,000%.
For sure,
10,000%.
For sure,
but yeah,
for sure. So like, as I had to actually spend time studying, I was like, oh wow, okay,
yeah.
Then you know the racism, you know, understanding different dynamics, social settings, all of that. Okay, then when you finally realize that, you know, like, nothing is going to move forward or nothing is going to happen unless I take charge of it. You know, I felt like I lived in a bubble of, you know, so there's always someone around to help me or knows one or two. This one, I was like, Malik, if you don't do it or if you don't start thinking about these things, nothing is going to happen. So that's when I started realizing, okay, I'm going to have to, it's not just all vibes. Let's take a breather here.
Yeah, that's one thing I will say about America. There's a lot of resources available to you, especially in like university. But it's the kind of thing where you have to advocate for yourself. You have to seek them out. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, so sorry for you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wait, but like at 17/18, did you guys feel ready to come to like, or to move to America? Or did you feel still very young?
I felt,
I felt ripe. I felt ripe to move. And I
not think, ripe. That was not a necessary word to use.
To use to describe that. Yeah, yeah.
You have a yellow card.
I felt ready because, to be fair, also by the time I was leaving Nigeria, I was so ready to like be done. I don't know what was chasing me out of Lagos, but mentally I was done with Nigeria and I was ready to like, you know, enter this new phase. And then also my parents were very big about like, you know how people did like, oh, they'll skip primary five or they'll skip something or whatever. They were very big on us being in the same class as our age mates. So part of doing that gap year, I also did a gap year before I started uni. They wanted us to be 18 so we could start at 18 with other American college students starting at 18. So yeah, at the time I felt like this is the age that you are supposed to be going to university. So I didn't feel like I was underprepared or not mature enough to do it. Yeah.
What did you guys do during your gap year? Like, I'm so curious.
Yeah. Assimilation.
Did you travel, like, see Europe?
No. I spent my gap year in my parents' house. Because my parents had moved to America. Yeah. It was not the freedom that the people were expecting.
Yeah.
Because I think, honestly, my gap year was pretty depressing. Not even going to hold you. Because I moved to a new country. I was in a new state. I didn't know anybody. I literally got a job at Home Goods so I could leave the house, you know, for a few hours in the day. I didn't know any of the people who worked there. They all sort of went to high school together. And, you know, high school kids, one of the nicest people. Like, we're not great at that.
When I see high school kids these days, I literally walk the other way. It's so crazy.
I'm afraid of them.
Like,
I'm
afraid. Wow.
Yeah. So I was counting down until starting college. I think a good chunk of my gap year was also spent like touring schools to see where I wanted to go.
For me, gap year, it wasn't too bad because, again, like, I knew I was going to start school in the fall. It was just a matter of where. So I think I ended up taking classes at like the local community college, you know, just to stay busy and be doing something. I was living with my uncle at the time.
Scholar.
I didn't have anything doing.
Yeah.
So I think I did that up until like May. Then in the summer, I think we did some traveling. Abim came, my parents came. I was hanging out with my older cousins in Chicago and I was living their lifestyle. And that was very much fun to me at the time as well. So
yeah,
mine was pretty good. So sorry, Abim.
It's okay.
I was going to ask you guys, I wanted to know, when did Canada start feeling like home? Tiffany, you talked about like, you know, like when you were going through it with other people, it didn't feel as bad, right? Like when you make a community, you can start, you know, getting some resemblance of home. When did you start getting comfortable?
When I probably got my first apartment, I think. Yeah, I feel like that was it. Because I think first year I was living on res, so like residence, and like I was
love how she stayed in res, like we're supposed to just be knowing.
So that's why I explained in her residence, like on campus.
Yeah, appreciate. Yeah,
and I was 16, and I think kind of like, you know, when you had mentioned starting university at 18 and how it felt like that was when you're supposed to start. I feel like for me, it did not feel that way at all because I was 16, I was in engineering, everybody was like 18, 19. Mm-hmm. I feel like even when I came to SOC, I probably felt more comfortable. So when I went to my pre-university, I felt more comfortable than I felt when I was entering university. Because university, I was so young. Everybody was like, oh my gosh, you're 16, you must be so smart. I'm like,
oh yeah.
No, I just skipped 500. 100 days in school.
Yeah. So like, I'm just Nigerian.
I'm just Nigerian. And they're like, literally, like, school showed me Pepe. Like, it was hard. Mm-hmm. So, like, first year on campus, I didn't really feel as... It was nice, though. It was fun. I had fun, but I definitely didn't feel as... I didn't feel as home. But then, my second year, I actually moved off of campus. Mm-hmm. And then I got my apartment with a friend, and that was kind of when it started feeling like home, because like my dad came, he took us shopping, and like we literally furnished the entire place, like we didn't spend a dime. Like my dad just like finished the entire place, and like, you know, we bought all this like really comfy couches, and it just felt like
You're making now your I have own home space.
And I still had like, you know, my friends. Exactly. And I still had like, you know, friends from like, you know, my pre-university. And then I still had, I had some friends from university as well. And yeah, I had like, you know, my church family, my church friends as well. So it's that feeling like a lot more like home after I did get my first apartment. And then my sister came a couple years later and it just felt like more and more like home. So I think getting my first apartment really was like the start of it. And then like, you know, my sister coming now kind of almost like sealed it for me because like my brother was already here. So yeah, that was it for me.
Fair enough. I feel like making a home quite literally helps a lot.
I know.
Helps you feel like home.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially when the home was nice, because I feel like if I was furnishing that place myself, it probably not feel like home because I probably wouldn't have had anything. But because my dad also came to like help us set it up, it just felt like it felt right. Like it felt like, okay, now I can kind of like almost begin my life here in Canada again. Because I was also in a new city as well from where I did my pre-university.
It's like, let's try this again.
So that was nice. Yeah. That was nice for me. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience. I think for me too, I didn't start to feel at home in America until I also moved off campus and got my own place. And it was a new city. So it felt like, okay, let me try this America thing again. Now that I know what I'm getting into, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that part. Now that I know what I'm getting into,
Matilda, when do you start feeling like home?
I was listening to you guys and I was like, do I actually see Canada as home?
Yeah.
I guess I like this. Now, but I think I was like forced into it during the pandemic, really. But I think it was only till the pandemic and like my world just became so much smaller that I had to like really call. And I, when I think of home, I don't think of Canada. I just think of like my apartment. But like Canada, does Canada feel like home? I don't think so still. Because I still code switch at work. There's still times when people are talking about the system and there's parts of the system that I don't know because I didn't necessarily go to school here. I mean, no, not school, but like I didn't grow up here. So like when they're talking about their like elementary school system.
I have a question, I guess. I'm sorry, I know you guys are the ones asking questions, but just like a question. So just a question on Matilda's, I guess, comment. Do you think like the reason why it hasn't really felt as much like home is because, I mean, and I guess learning all these things about like elementary school is because you haven't really tried as much to learn about all these things that we don't know about? Because I know for me sometimes it has felt like whenever things feel not that kind of feels as much like at home, but like whenever, like, I don't know something about the system, I'm like, I don't care that much to learn about it. So I'm like, whatever. It's like, when I get that bridge, I'll cross it. So that's kind of what I'm asking. I'm wondering if it's like the same thing for you, where it's like, when you don't know these things and it doesn't feel like home, is it because you haven't really cared to learn or you genuinely actually tried and you're like, nah, it doesn't feel like home?
I mean, I didn't try to learn because... Not because I actively didn't want to learn, but because I don't feel the connection already to the place like that. Like if, like I feel like, for example, in Nigeria, the mannerisms, like when I think of the workplace, for example, in Nigeria, I'll think like people who are just like me, I don't need to explain myself. And that would feel like home. Stressful, but home. So there's parts of our culture that I find so stressful, but it's like, I know it and it's familiar, but here it's
comfortable.
Like, I feel like here every couple of months, I'm still learning a new thing. And I've been here for like 10 years now. So it's like, I want it to feel like home in that it doesn't, there should be no pretense. I should just have to be, I can just be myself, but like, I can't just be myself. But what's crazy though is sometimes when I go to Nigeria, I don't feel at home anymore either. So I don't know where home is right now, but I think perhaps maybe when I start having kids and kind of like experiencing it with them as they grow up here, perhaps I'm going to start feeling more like it's home if I have kids here. But I would say that I don't quite still feel like it's home.
Very interesting. We're going to come back to that. But Dizzy D, talk to us. Do you feel home?
Honestly, I I'd say it depends. I would say not really. Like, I feel like throughout the conversation, I was like, what does home feel like? It's been a while. Like, I mean, the last time I felt like home was maybe like, maybe when I visit my family, I feel like I'm home, you know, that kind of thing. So like, I can't say Canada, like, does Canada feel like home? It's hard to say. Like, I mean, I do like being in Canada. Canada is good. Like, do you get, but I think home for me is more so where I am within like a small square footage and who's in that small area and stuff like that. So I don't know that's like, it really matters the country necessarily. And also, interestingly enough, I was speaking to, I have a friend who's Canadian, and we were just on your note, Matilda, about like culture and just feeling like you can say something and people understand you. I feel like she was born in Canada, but she was saying that she feels like there's no kind of one culture within Canada that she can point to say, this is Canadian culture. So it could also be a thing where...
Poutine is Canadian culture.
But like, I mean...
Hockey is
Canadian culture.
But like, it's still not like... I don't know. She just expressed that it's still not like compared to... Like when she sees Nigerians, for example, interacting, like there's just a layer of culture that is just not as layered when it, in Canada, Canadian culture, I guess. So, and that's just, it just has to do with like the immigration, the amount of immigrants coming into Canada, blending in with the general culture, I guess, and changing things up a bit. So in terms of me, I think my home for me depends on who's around and where I am. Like, I like Canada, but like, ultimately, will I leave Canada for opportunities? Yeah. So it kind of depends.
Interesting. I feel like it's, I don't know, I guess I was shocked to hear like 10 years in, it's still not feeling like home. And I can understand the sentiment of where that comes from, 10,000%, because there's definitely moments where I'm just like, wow, so I'm just in America. Good to know. But also, in the same vein of home is less about where you physically are, and kind of more about like how it feels.
Exactly.
Like the comfort that that brings. And I think...
Do you think it has to do, though, with the fact that your family, your nuclear family, is there with you?
I think 10,000%.
No, okay, Malik, you can't.
Wow, interesting.
I don't necessarily think so. It's because when
it's a mix of that and passport color. I can't lie to you. Because, one, Nigeria stopped having that home feeling for me because my parents are here, in that I wasn't going home every December because there wasn't family that I needed to go. Do you know what I'm saying? My mom wasn't like, I want to go to home. I could literally just do a domestic flight and make it home. And two, nobody can drive me from this country. That's the honest truth. Like I imagine that if I didn't have the citizenship privilege, that I would still have a layer of, I'm still a visitor, I'm still in somebody else's house. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So I can understand that. I can understand that for sure.
I think it's funny that we have, you know, two different experiences, because the only time I remember that my passport is blue is when it's time to take a trip. Sometimes, like, it doesn't factor that much to me in my life. I'm
serious. That's significant if you ask me.
It's quite. You know what?
Yeah. I think the privilege just cast it. It just cast it.
It's people that their passport, that's they don't why remember their passport is blue. Because if it was green, you know the visa that you have to do.
I am constantly aware that my passport is green.
I've exposed myself. But yeah, but like, it was more so from like, when Tiffany was asking Matilda, like, have you ever, like, given this place a chance? Like, have you ever gone out to, you know, experience Canada, you know, it's stress form, it's culture, and then say that, okay, it doesn't feel like home. I don't even know if I've even had the desire to do that. Like, I haven't caught myself being like, yeah, I'm like, okay, let me see what's going on. Like, home has mostly been that community that I've created, that bubble that I have. Then again, I can also relate to, okay, being here, not feeling American, then also going home and not feeling as Nigerian, but then having the actual comfort in that community that you create. Because when I say I made America a home for myself now, and it does feel like home, if you ask an American to look at what that, look at what my America is like, he cannot recognize that at all.
It's very
different. And I think that that community that we've created for ourselves, that lifestyle, that bubble, I think that's our home. And I think it's that's okay. Home. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like in many ways, like, still, even though it feels home legally, there's still things that happen here that I'm still like, yeah, this is different. This is an American. Yeah.
No, for sure. And I think, like, even same-ish for me. It's like, even though, like, it does feel like home in that, like, it does feel like home in that I'm, like, I'm cozy and, like, kind of like what Malik said. Like, I do have a community of, like, friends that I grew up with here. Like, I feel like most of my friends are here. And, like, you know, I have people that I've grown up with here. I do have family here as well. Like, I have, like, aunties and uncles and stuff like that. So I think, like, you know, my community also makes it feel like home to me as well. But I think there's also, like, things like that, like what Matilda said, where I'm like, I do actually feel that, where having to code switch at work, or I recently just like going by Imama at work, and where it's like,
makes a difference.
Makes a difference. And it's I've kind of gone like, and honestly, I love Tiffany. Like, I love the name and everything. It is my name, and that's why I put it in everything. Like, I don't just go by, my name is just Imama Igunu. Like, I put Tiffany everywhere, but going by my first name that I went by when I was in Nigeria, and like now going by that, like now at work, that's the thing that I wasn't doing for like the past 10 plus years. So like now doing it, like, just like feels different. So it's like things like that where I'm like having to code switch, having to have gone by a different name, having to, you know, be writing down the pronunciation of my name, like Iman, like those things. It's like, it makes it feel like an out-of-body experience, like, okay, maybe this is not really home. But I do think, like, the community and the fact that I did grow up here, like, I think very soon I would have spent more years in Canada than I spent in Nigeria. And that's kind of wild to me. Like, I'm like, so I feel like those kind of things make me feel like, okay, you know what, maybe, this does feel like home. And I, you know, as much as there are lots of things here that I don't understand or even don't care to understand it. Like, I'm just recently starting to get into their politics. For the longest time, I was like, it's not my business. But I'm like, no, it is my business now.
Not
like,
your you know, business.
Exactly. So, like, things like that, I feel like it's just starting to make it feel more and more like home. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't think I've actually sat down to think about that much before. So, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, welcome.
In the same vein, though, of like, I guess feeling like home, can I ask, what are your immigration statuses? Like, if something happens tomorrow, can Canada kick you out?
So technically, I should have gotten my passport by now, but it's laziness that is currently doing me. So I currently don't have my passport yet. Hoping to have it soon.
Let's work on that,
But, oh no, yes, I will. By the grace of God, before the end of this year.
So, did you apply now?
That's a great question.
I'm
going to apply before the end of this week.
Okay.
That's make it to
your
home has a staring.
Please, it's still home, because if I apply now, they, by the grace of God, they'll give me it. I don't think it's any reason they will not give me. But I'm currently just like a permanent resident. I don't have my passport yet, but it's not because I'm not eligible, it's just because of laziness. But,
How long does it take to get a permanent residency?
So you should have, I guess, like, with Canadian experience.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, keep me honest. I think 2 years,
there's
right?
There's multiple routes you can go, but I guess we went the Canadian experience route because we went to school here.
Okay.
So what happens when you go to university here, or I can only speak to our experience, I guess, the university route. You get an open work permit for 3 years.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah. So like you are eligible for that, like once you finish university.
Nice.
So we applied for that. But you have to apply for it within a certain amount of time after you mm-hmm. finish, like literally after your last exam, not your graduation. Mm-hmm. So I know someone that left it like after your, like you get your grades or something like that. It's one of,
See, I didn't even know
I know someone that left it too long and they had to go back to Nigeria. Because once you miss applying, But yeah, so then after you apply for the work permit, you have to have a job for 2 years.
Okay.
Out of the 3 years that they've given you. And then once you're able to prove that you held a job, I guess, and you mm-hmm. contributed to their economy for 2 years, then you get the permanent residence.
And now it's
Bro. And then I think then a year, is it a year after that or 2 years after that?
For what?
That you're eligible to apply for citizenship. Wow. Okay, a year after, because one more year counted, right? Well, I got mine in 2021.
I think so you switched it around. No, you switched it. So you get your PR 1 year after working. And then after you get your permanent residence 1 year after working, then you get your passport 2 years after you've had your permanent residence. But that's only if you've been in the... So the years that you've been in the country make up for like 1 year, depending on how... So it's 3 years after you get your permanent residence that you actually get your passport. But mm-hmm. if you were in the country like us that came like 500 years ago, then all those years essentially count for like 1 year. Yeah, so they count mm-hmm. for 1 year. Then you have to stay 2 extra years after your permanent residence for you to get your passport.
So for a total of 3 years.
Yeah, for a total of 3 years. Yeah.
Not six years, actually.
Oh, I was counting your 3 year work permit.
No, you don't have to work the whole 3 years. It's
you just have to work 1 year.
1 year, exactly. Yeah, but
so you can be faffing in the country for 2 years. And then and I mean, job
actually, it's
year.
Funny. That's kind of what I did. So, well, not 2 years. Making me sound like a very, very unserious person? This is not true. I'm a very serious
but it's worked out for you, so it's okay.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm like, but yeah, actually, I had my work permit, and then I actually got a job like a year and a half into my work permit, and then I worked for 1 year, then I got my PR. I remember like my work permit actually expired, so I had to get a bridging. So if your work permit expires, you cannot, like, you technically cannot, you have to leave the country because you're not here illegally or whatever. But because I applied for my PR before my work permit expired, then I was good to just get a bridging work permit. So that's also one thing. Once your open work permit expires, you have to leave. Exactly, you have to leave unless you have applied for a permanent resident before that expires. Then you can now like kind of get a bridging work permit until you get your permanent residence. And if you don't get a permanent residence, then you have to leave. So
I understand why we are moving in flux to Canada.
To Canada.
It's kind of like an easy-ish process.
Yeah.
I think it's easier.
Yeah.
In this America, if your degree is not same 1 year.
What is the process?
You either find a job.
Wait, so if your degree is STEM.
I think STEM people have 3 years.
Hmm. Yeah, they get 2 years and then 1 year extension.
That is just racism.
Yes, don't think we shall.
I'm good.
Yeah, and then if you get a job, they still have to apply for a work visa for you. And it's not even work visa as in, oh, we're going to sponsor her and it's all good. There's now a lottery system. Mm. So you might have a job. Willing to sponsor you for that lottery.
But they put you into a lottery.
They put you into the lottery. So if they don't put your name, even though you are employed and your employer said they won't sponsor you, you got to go. I know a lot of people who are currently in Canada and currently in the UK because they couldn't get... Because their name wasn't pulled out of that lottery. Yeah.
I still did not know that's how it worked.
Don't come to America, guys. Yeah.
Honestly, I wonder why people still go there.
Yeah.
I seriously wonder why people go there because, like, I know some people
because
that
it's
have
America.
The option between.
Yeah, they're like, what are you going to do in Canada?
No, but the way I look at it, if you're really thinking, if Jackpot is your main purpose, like an intention, you can just play the long game, because when you get the Canadian passport, so much more opportunities are open to you, and you can still end up in that said America that you want to end up in. But to go to America initially and just have such an uncertain future,
it's crazy.
But I guess the thing also with America is, I think once you make it, you kind of make it, because even like when it comes to like salary and stuff like
but
that.
But if you don't, you don't.
But if you don't.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I guess if you don't, you don't. But you know, I mean, I guess it also depends on how you see it. It's kind of like that phrase of like, what if I fall? Oh, but what if you fly? It's like, what if you fly? If you fly, you are flying.
No, because if you fly, it's like 10,000%. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's the thing, because it's like, I think, I feel like it might just be a thing where it's like you toss the coin and you're like, I'm just going to go with what might bring money fastest, because the same job that you're doing in Canada, you can literally be earning times two in America in US dollars. So it's things like that where
like the exact same company,
and the cost of living in
same,
Canada is also exact
it's same higher, company, same exact role. Same like role. I know someone who was in, I don't remember what job he was trying to get. He was trying to transfer to a job in Toronto, but he was like, the salary is just lower. Like sense. He's like,
in fact, the Canadian dream now is to get a job in America. No, it really is to get a remote job in Canada, in America. That is a Canadian dream. Because it's like, you will literally be earning in US dollars times two what you earn in Canada. And cost of living in Canada, especially if you're in Ontario, is ridiculously high. Like, it makes no sense. So it's like,
I'd still rather be here. I wouldn't like
to. Oh, for sure.
Maybe I'm risk averse. Maybe that's what it is. But I don't see life in terms of maximum.
How much money can I make here?
Oh no, that's that's not what I said. I see Nigeria. I see in terms of how can I not go back to Nigeria?
Okay, and what's the surest way to do that? Okay,
the surest way to do that, at least now I would think of it. Again, as we mentioned, like when we left Nigeria, it wasn't necessarily in our thought process. But if it was me right now, I wouldn't do America. Just saying.
Wow, you guys are really opening my eyes up to this. I thought it was, I thought Canada, America, I thought it was almost like for like
with pay, like in terms of lifestyle. Money?
Yeah, pay, lifestyle, everything. Yeah. Oh wow.
What, it's what very kind of different.
We wish.
Yeah, because
no. In some aspects, not every aspect.
No, what do you mean by in some aspects and every aspect?
Malik said he thought Canada was just like America, and Imama said, I wish, and I was like, not really in all aspects. If it's money,
I wish in the money aspect. Aspects, but yeah, I feel like Malik was gonna say something.
You guys touched on like how, like, I mean, the path to citizenship is, you know, pretty good compared to like the UK and the US. It's still a little, you know, complicado, but because it's so easy, I feel like I want to know, it's kind of like a melting pot. Like, do you guys see a lot of people from other parts of Africa, from all around the world? It's kind of like a melting point. And what kind of advice would you give to like someone, you know, starting out that immigration journey? Like, if it was you all over again, what kind of information would you have liked to have known?
I wouldn't say it's so easy to start with, actually.
Okay.
I want to correct that. I think if you really listen to our story, all three of us, there's a lot of privilege in there. That's what makes it look so easy and what has made it feel so easy. But I would like to acknowledge that it's not easy because the bar of entry, the bar of actually entering is a bit higher. So like, for example, I think Canada has like a stat where like during the pandemic, they a lot of people immigrated here or something, like they accepted a lot of immigrants. But really what had happened is that they lowered the score and they made it easier for people that were already here to become citizens. But the bar is still high for people that aren't here, in that you still need to be of a certain financial status. You still need to be of a certain education, like, and et cetera, or skill set and stuff like that. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's easy, but mm-hmm. yeah,
also,
I mean,
it might be worth mentioning that we've all been here for like 10 years, and I don't think we've all gotten our citizenship, or even if we have, it's probably a recent thing. So I feel like that's also something that is quite interesting as well.
I honestly would say if you're coming, like, and your sole purpose is to jackpot, you want to go to the school route, I would say pick the easiest, not the easiest, but the diploma, the shortest diploma that could get you PR, because I know someone who, this is back when I was in first year, second year, I was looking at her and I was like, oh my gosh, I should have just done this. And it's crazy because that time we didn't even start having money issues, but I was always counting my dad's pockets. I don't know. I was like,
no, because you're paying like 10 times what
your parents are paying. She came in, she did, I don't know what she did, but it was like a 2-year diploma. And then she got her PR. She worked. She got her PR, and then she actually went back to school to do a degree. So basically, she got her citizenship quickly, and then she went back to school. So it's still a long process, but ultimately, if your goal is to jackpot, like, that is the cheaper way to go, essentially, or do a master's or something like.
Yeah. But I'll add a caveat to that, though, because you want to be careful, because if you actually do a diploma that is less than 2 years, then they would only give you a work permit of however many.
It's 1 year or something.
Yeah, I think it's 1 year. So they only give you a work permit for 1 year. So you only have 1 year to find a job. So you want to make sure that you are doing something that would allow you get that 3 years. So, like, at least you have like a bit of like a breather.
Their website has the list. I don't know if the website has a list and they kind of show the conversions, like what you could get with each.
Yeah, I think they do. Yeah, I think
like the immigration,
CIC, so the Canadian CIC. Immigration. Yeah, the website. Yeah, but
the website.
It's a Canadian immigration.
Let me Google it actually quickly.
1 second,
but
Sound like that guy. What was the meaning of NSCDC? I cannot categorically
tell you.
Yeah.
Well, so it's cic.gc.ca.
Yeah, there you go.
No, because if Imama tells you something and your guy at the top says something,
please, Lord, now you're taking us back. No, but yeah, so cic.gc.ca.
Citizenship and Immigration Canada, I think that's what it's.
Yeah, that's what it means. But yeah, and I think just to answer Malik's question as well, Canada is a melting pot. I think there's so many different nationalities, so many different people from places that I had never known before I came here. So and I think, you know, one thing, I guess apart from immigration advice, just like personality or life advice that I would give whoever it was that was coming here was just to be open-minded. I think just don't be ignorant, because Nigerians can be very ignorant. So I think if you are coming, it's really to not be ignorant, because there are things that you say in Nigeria that are accepted or whatever, and it's like nobody really says anything, and you would get into like heaps of trouble here. So it's like, I mean, nobody's saying that you must agree with everything that you see in front of you, but just do not be ignorant and be open-minded, and at least speak with wisdom, think first before you say things, so you're not getting into a ridiculous amount of unnecessary trouble that would now prevent your JAPA journey from finishing. So I think that's probably an advice I'd give, because like I said, it really is a melting pot of different types of people. And I think also probably another thing I would say is actually do your research, because I think sometimes as Nigerians we also like the easy way out, where it's like somebody has done this thing.
Yeah,
we love a shortcut. Like it's like 10 people have done this, since I'm just going to do it, when it's like no, like just research and actually see if there are like better ways for you to do it. And just like in general, like just do your research, just even just to prevent getting scammed, to prevent losing money from doing things like the longer ways, and just like so many other things. Just do your research and just don't be ignorant, and come here with an open mind and kind of willing to assimilate. Is that the right word? I think that's the right word. Willing to assimilate, and
I feel like assimilate or acculturation, I think is the word.
You have lost me. I don't know that one.
Never heard that word before. Acculturation.
I have never heard that word before.
Me too.
So assimilation is essentially like, okay, you're kind of absorbing into Canadian society. And I think that's part of where you now start going by Tiffany. And like, you know, sort of morphing your personality to not try and fit into this new society. Acculturation is like, how can I exist as myself, like my true face in this new and still be a part of the society, if that makes sense.
I think that's the one. Yeah, maybe not the other one, but this acculturation one. But yeah, I think that's like my advice I would give.
Okay. Hadiza, do you have any special advice for the peoples?
No, I have to think about it. Sorry.
Nice.
Actually, I have one that I learned more recently. And it has more to do with racism and like race kind of interactions, essentially, because I feel like coming to Canada, you get like inundated with like, I mean, you experience, but you also get told that racism exists, like, and all these kind of things, right? But I think also still leaving small gap for benefit of doubt, reason being, it just allows you to like interact with people without feeling that like you're being aggressed. Or any small like kind of negative interaction from someone who is, let's say, white could be a sign. Do you get what I'm saying? So I think that's one thing I would say. And that's something I had to kind of learn, because I mean, it's something I didn't really have at the forefront of my mind, but because of all the content you watch and read, you kind of have it at the back of your mind, and also experiences too. But then also after some time, okay, specifically, I had an internship where like literally my whole team, like there was not one person of color, which in that is problematic.
Canada?
Yeah, the whole team, there was not one person of color. That was problematic.
One person of color. I mean, I understand black people, but like,
no person of color. I mean, so that was interesting for me. That was an interesting experience. But then I think in that, I really learned that like people are people. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, and I think one experience that told me that was, so there was a protest happening in Ottawa relating to truckers. What were truckers protesting about? I think COVID and the COVID restrictions.
The vaccination. COVID,
so one of my coworkers who is like white had asked, you know, hey Hadiza, you know, it's really hard. I know you're living alone right now. Do you want to kind of come stay with me for the weekend? She had a nice house somewhere, like in the countryside, very nice cabin, home, like her and her partner had built it themselves, a lot of land and all that kind of stuff. So she invited me, and then which was first of all very nice, and then the second thing that kind of stood out to me was we went to another small town where like there was also barely any people of color, and then we entered this shop and this lady was kind of rude, just as in her personality was rude. But the thing is, if I had approached that woman myself, I would have assumed for sure this woman's racist. Like, do you get what I'm saying? But like, I saw her be rude to also like the woman who came with me, right? And who was also white as well. And this, the way she was rude, I would have assumed this is racism rude, but she was just flat out rude. So there are
things. It's just her personality.
Yeah, it's just her personality. So I feel like kind of just allowing yourself to give people room to really experience people one-on-one, and don't look at people as a monolith, essentially, is what I would advise. But yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Like, the advice is also for me, so I'll take it as well.
Okay. I think those are all my questions for you guys. Do you guys have any for us? Anybody else? Other questions?
I have a question. Would you guys move back to Nigeria?
Malik, weren't you planning a move back in during the pandemic?
Yeah,
I'm screaming. So
things have changed.
Yeah.
Okay, but okay, wait. But not the Nigeria now. Like, let's say if, you know, Peter Obi wins this tribunal stuff, and if, you know, Nigeria does
who's going to break it to her?
Like, the deep breath is actually like, everybody sighing deeply is sending me so much. I choose to believe, but anyways. Wait, so would you guys still not move, even if things like did get better, say in like 2 years? Or are you guys like, or are you all just set on the States and Canada?
I have, so my partner is not Nigerian. I do not see a version of him that will be in Lagos traffic with me.
I'm screaming.
I do not see that version of myself either, to be honest. I think, yeah, I feel like I've experienced...
Okay, both of Abuja. Abuja doesn't have traffic.
Yeah, I think I've just... To be very honest, like, I really do see America as home now. Yeah. I've been able to create that home for myself. And obviously, like, it's not the same permanent home in, like... If I got a job in a different state today, I'd probably make that move, right? But the way my brain works, I don't see Nigeria as home. I would maybe hope for a situation where I'm like, one contract will bring me back home, you know.
So you want to be an expat?
Expat way now.
Because the expat experience in Lagos is actually probably
it's so different.
To actually move back.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
To experience Lagos.
Yeah.
Like earning in dollars, but being in Lagos.
Thank you.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
Okay, but would you guys move outside of the States? Like, just like, let's say not even back to Nigeria. Like, would you move outside, like, Kenya, like, Canada, the UK?
What am I looking for? What am I looking for in Canada?
I'm screaming. Excuse you.
Like, what am I looking for? Yeah.
Can I answer your question, Imama?
Yes, I asked.
I think I would. I see
wait,
a tweet.
You would, which
move
one?
Back to Nigeria. Okay, wait. I have conditions.
Matilda is a
patriot. She's still not home. Yeah.
Yeah, remember, first of all, I'm not home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not home there.
But also, I think it's only given what the conditions that Imama gave, because it's like, if Nigeria really was working, a lot of us will not be here. And I think the question, I need to dig deeper into the question, because I think we don't actually imagine a Nigeria that works. And that's what makes a lot of people, even when Imama says, oh, if Peter Obi wins, that's not actually utopia. Like, Peter Obi winning is not going to lead to the perfect Nigeria. I think we can actually fathom a Nigeria that works, because there's multiple levels of issues in the country that just one president, like a new president, a good president, cannot solve.
We need
solve.
To pull the switch from the back and blow it.
Like, literally, yeah.
And then,
But if there was a Nigeria that works the way that, like, an American system or a Canadian system works, there's issues with the system, but like, it's working. You know, if Nigeria existed in that way, yes, I'd want to be in Nigeria. I want to be surrounded by my family. I don't want to be 1,000 miles away while my parents are aging. Mm-hmm. I don't want to miss knowing my new cousins. They're cousins that have been born since I've been here that I literally don't know. Like, I go back, I see them like for 2 weeks and then I'm out. I don't know them. I want to be at work and not have to code switch. I want to
switch your song.
Yeah, I want to know how to speak my language. I want to go back to my village. I want to contribute to my people's politics. I want to be to get to know who I am.
Spoken word.
Don't kill me. Like, there's so many there's so many reasons why
I feel you, though.
I would want to be in Nigeria over here. But it's just the country doesn't work. So it's like, I am going back to destroy my future, where like I could have had a brighter future here. So it's just like,
it almost feels like
it can be destroyed if you already have a passport. True. Girl, But you go back once you have your passport. Now, there's no destruction.
When I do get the passport, I have dreams of being there for a year, but not necessarily like being there, as Malik said, for like a long time, max a year, because you can only take Nigeria in doses. Like Abim Sola said, she can't imagine being in traffic, for example. If in a Lagos that works, you wouldn't be in traffic. Like, you are only you might not be in traffic because there's you won't be in Lagos traffic. See, there's traffic.
Okay.
But because I'm like, traffic.
In this Toronto that works,
traffic.
Yeah. Traffic makes me puke. So, it's still disgusting.
In it's gross. Lagos it's traffic.
Gross.
Yeah.
That's go slow. Yes.
That's go slow. In Lagos, you are not just sitting in standstill, you are also living in fear that somebody is going to come and rob you. Lagos traffic is not Toronto traffic. So when you imagine that, you're imagining the Nigeria that currently exists. But when Imama says a Nigeria that works, I think of not what exists right now. And I think that's what discourages a lot of people of wanting to move to Nigeria. But maybe we should start imagining where we want to be. And like perhaps...
But guys, is that the Lulu?
It's the Lulu. It is the Lulu.
I don't think so. I don't think it's delusional, guys. I don't.
No, but you're talking giving Martin Luther King, honestly.
I think you need to be a little delusional for changes to happen. Like,
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually don't think it's that delusional, to be very honest. I don't think it's that delusional. I think that Nigeria can work. I really think that it can and
wait,
it
will in our
work
lifetime.
And it just needs...
Okay, yes. In our lifetime. Yes. What is described to me a not so delusional version of Nigeria that could work in the next 5 to 10 years. Yeah.
And explain our path to that place, because you can't just
can
describe
we relax because I am not a politician. I'm not an economist. I am not any of these things.
Lisa, please, what is your
because if you
momentum?
Can't describe it, then it is delusion.
Okay, you know what? See, you should allow me, give me 1 week to go and study politics. I'll come back to you guys. But on a serious note though, like I don't have like, so I think me saying that Nigeria can work is not based on like any political one thing that I know or any facts that I do have with my like on ground, but I think it's just renewed hope. So I think even with this Peter Obi thing, and I'm not saying that he's going to win the tribunal stuff or he wouldn't win it, I don't know, but I think like the way that hope was like restored even when like he was potentially coming into power. For me, like that felt like something new. Yeah. It felt like something fresh. And even from the NSARS, exactly, it mattered. And even the way like the Nigerian youths like rose up with NSARS and then this Peter Obi thing. For me, it just gives me that whole hope that like we actually can and are getting somewhere. And I feel like just based off of like all of that, like Peter Obi, NSARS, and I also think like combined with the potential of Peter Obi actually coming into government. I don't know if he will, but like if he does come in, I do think like, I don't know, I feel like it like sparks a new hope that I think can take Nigeria to the next level. Because I think that I think what we're missing is actually hope. And I think that where there is hope, there is the potential for change. Because I do think that a lot of people have given up. Because even with this last election, I went to Lagos like a few weeks. Like, I went to Lagos sometime in June, and I was talking to, like, my Uber driver, who was, like, a young Nigerian, like, probably the same age that I was. And he was saying how, oh, he didn't vote because he didn't care, and blah, 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 blah. And I think, like, a lot of Nigerians are, like, even though we see social media, like, everybody's like, oh, we voted, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like the majority of Nigerians are not on Twitter. And I don't think, like, a lot of Nigerians have that hope that we kind of see on the Twitter streets. So I do think that when that hope becomes more localized and more on the Nigerian, like, the average Nigerian feeling that hope, I do think that even in themselves, they will start to behave and move better because they know that their behavior actually will lead to something better.
Yeah.
That's just what I think. Because it's kind of like, and I said this on, I guess, the last episode that we dropped, the Amiibo Interludes.
Okay, plug.
A little plug to the African episode. Sorry, African episode podcast. But I just said, it's kind of that thing of like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Where it's like, did the bad governance come before the bad people, or did the bad people come before the bad governance? Mm-hmm. But I do think that with hope leads to better people, and better people hopefully leads to better governance leads to better people, leads to better governance. And I think just based off of that cycle, I do think that Nigeria can work in our lifetime.
This is
and
why.
With this speech, I hope I've been able to convince and not confuse you. That Nigeria can work in our lifetime. I'm screaming.
Oh, my head girl for
you. You get head. That's how my mama won head girl.
Yeah.
Lord. But yeah, so that, that's just what I think.
I think it's really okay to admit that it's a little delusional. I'm like, when I say it's delusional, I think I hear what you say. Like, we should all have hope, but I think we should all be a bit delusional, because if you really look at how like deep the issues run, you would know that it takes a little more than just hope. It takes action. And if you're like, if you are a little delusional and like you just hope, I guess delusion, I kind of see delusional and hope in the context of Nigeria as the same thing. because you have to be a little delusional to have hope, because the way they've crushed and they keep crushing any hope that we have, you have to be a little delusional. But
okay, I have a question off of that. What then is the role of the immigrants like ourselves, Chai, I went to school, in contributing to that Nigeria that we hope for? Because that's the reality of it. Like, we're not ground. So what can we actually do that could possibly make it better for us to maybe consider moving back? Or not even that, like just even helping people on ground, like,
yeah, like sending money back home.
Yeah, but back home to who? As far as the general people, to like,
during NSARS, like a lot of the money that was sent back to support that was also from Nigerians abroad. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. That's actionable.
There are all these groups. I don't know if they actually make a huge difference, but I know they make some difference. Like, there's a lot of Nigerians that feel that same thing, like, this is not necessarily my home, and they want to contribute to their home. I know it all generally ties back to like finances and stuff, but I think even just like gathering together and talking about these things and like actually having people on ground to implement these things, because a lot of times too, you might send money and it might not end up where you actually want it to end up. So if you're a little bit more involved, you kind of know where that money is going and where that effort is going. And I truly think that we should be going back to Nigeria to vote. I know it's not easy.
You know what I was going to say? Yeah. I think that is actually a move. Imama, I think we might... So we might have a work for you. If you can find a way to... No, no, I'm quite serious. If you can find a way to bulk register Nigerians in the diaspora who want to vote, that's even a way of giving back, even in and of itself.
I don't think they'll ever let that happen, but yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to make plans for us to vote here. And I think that's where it comes to, how much are you willing to discomfort yourself for your country as well? Because I think we are waiting for things to be ideal. I didn't vote either, so I know that it's not that.
And Matilda was ready.
I wanted to.
Matilda said that she was going to go back, that she was going to vote.
I wanted to, but what I'm trying to explain is that when we face a little bit of like discomfort or something, we're just like, we're not down. There. Yeah. But the amount of people that are not there and are leaving, there'll be no hope left if all of us just give up on the country. Like, so I feel like you will face discomforts, but I mean, keep trying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Where can the people find Afrikalypso on the internet?
Ooh, yeah. You can listen to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, really. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the other ones, yeah. We have a website, africalypsopodcast.com, and if you go there, you can get linked to like our social media at africalypsopod on Instagram, Twitter. Just check us out, hit us up, listen to a couple of our episodes, and join our community, most importantly. But
nice.
How about you guys? How can we find you guys on the internet?
You can find us, same thing, wherever you get your podcast, Jagpa Diaries, and of course on Instagram and TikTok. We're also on YouTube.
Oh, really?
At jagpa.diaries. Yeah, so if you want to see our beautiful faces, all five of our beautiful faces today, you can check it out on YouTube. But this was amazing, delicious. Guys, we're nearing 2 hours. Love that. We're just in. It's okay. But yeah, if you liked the episode, like, subscribe, share, and follow Afrikalypso and follow Japa Diaries. Don't play yourself, okay? We found you the new podcast season to stay. And yeah, we'll see you next week and in 2 weeks.
Yeah, in 2 weeks for us, so please don't expect things.
In 2 weeks for Afrikalypso, yeah. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye. It's been a pleasure. Bye, y'all.